Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome, or maybe welcome again, to My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and in this podcast, or as my mother-in-law calls it, a codpast, I ask people what five things from their life they would like to put into a time capsule. They pick four things that they cherish or think are significant to them, and one that has been a thorn in their side and they'd like to be rid of. But each thing is very personal to them. Talking about those things this week is the comedian and writer Lucy Porter. As one of the most popular stand-up comedians of the last 10 years, she's toured the world. And in between that, she's found time to be a regular guest on numerous TV and radio panel games, such as QI, Have I Got News For You, Mock the Week, The News Quiz, and The Unbelievable Truth. She's also a much sought-after comedy writer and columnist. Due to unforeseen circumstances, it was necessary for me to talk to Lucy remotely. Now, we considered visiting the Atacama Desert together, but as travel was restricted for all but government advisers, we settled on both staying in our respective homes and chatting via Zoom. And here's what we chatted about. Hope you enjoy it.
I've always been a bit of a hoarder, both emotionally and physically. I like to have lots of things around me, and like everywhere I've ever lived, always been messy because I've always had loads of stuff, and I'm always trying to keep up with too many people and do too many jobs, and because I just have that sort of very acquisitive nature. I just want everything now, and I have been trying to get better at that, but actually the global pandemic situation has kind of made me quite pleased that I didn't throw things away. Because somebody tweeted the other day, they said, oh, I feel sorry for all those people who marry condoed and now sitting around in their empty houses. Because like, we've got so much stuff, and like the kids, they're the same as me. They've inherited my hoarding nature, so they won't throw anything away. But it's been brilliant while we've been in lockdown, because they've got hundreds of things to play with. Like, we're making costumes, we've been making little video films where we all dress up. And we've got a dressing up trunk full of every costume Justin, my husband, and I have ever had from every job ever, and wigs and all the sort of crazy props from my Edinburgh shows and his Edinburgh shows. And so, yeah, so we have a lot of stuff. So consequently, what I'm saying is it's going to be hard for me to select just a few items. I mean, the main thing, probably the most important thing that is in my house, is my mum's ashes.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, in the event of a fire, I would have to, that would be the first thing I'd have to rescue to stop her being burnt twice, really. But yeah, that's the kind of weird one, because I've got my mum's ashes, my sister's got my dad's ashes. And because they were Catholic and my dad was very devout, now you have to bury ashes. I think the Catholic Church have made a new thing.
Yes, you do, yeah.
And my sister and I are absolutely rubbish at admin, both of us. And so we haven't got round, 3 years after my mum died, 4 years after my dad died, we haven't got round to burying the ashes. So my mum sits there and I chat with her, and I enjoy having the ashes, and I've got a couple of pictures of them. It's almost like a shrine, which again is very not Catholic. I sort of quite like having a little presence in the house. She's the only member of the house who doesn't talk back to me or shout at me. So it's going to be really hard, I think, when we do finally get round to burying her. I think I'll miss her again, you know, it'll be like a second kind of grieving process. But
yeah, I'm in exactly the same situation, isn't it? Yeah. My mother died a few years ago, and I absolutely have not got round to doing the things she asked me to do. In fact, the things she insisted I did, which was, you know, bury her with my dad. And I still have her in the cupboard. Every time I take a pair of shoes out, I say, sorry, Mum.
Oh, I know. You could get her out of the cupboard, Mike. I mean, come on.
I think she might well start telling me off.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
She suddenly says, hang on a minute. So this dark place isn't the grave.
Oh, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because there's, you know, that respecting of wishes. Because also, the other thing is we don't know whether to bury them in Ireland or in England. Because my dad had always said he wanted to be buried in Ireland, where he's from. Hmm. But I don't think my mum fancied the journey. I think she felt like it would be a bit much. So,
bit of a rough crossing.
Well, exactly, yes. Yeah, you know, yeah. She doesn't want to face that.
No, I'm afraid my mother's is still in one of the plastic container that it came in from the crematorium.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. An ice cream tub inside a cardboard box. So we've got the cardboard box out and then various pictures, including one that my mum really didn't like, and I must take it down. Because, again, it feels a bit disrespectful. If it were me and there was, like, you know, a picture that I didn't like, I'm sure I'd be furious. But you know, I'm not someone who's very spiritual, and, you know, I don't have a religious faith. I, you know, was very Catholic until I was about 12 or so, and then I kind of lost my faith then. Mm. But I still respect the faith and still feel, I don't know, I suppose there is a bit of me that still sort of, that kind of magical thinking of religion I really like. And I like the idea of benign forces in the universe and of, you know, people looking out for you. And I do always think, hang on a minute, was that my mum or dad intervening? Like, the month after my dad died, I got a job in the Seychelles. I went out to do this job in Seychelles, and the actual job ended up getting cancelled. So I basically got a 3 weeks holiday in the Seychelles. And I said to my husband, I was like, you know, it felt like my dad was sort of paying me back for, for, you know, everything he'd put us through. So who knows? But
what did your mum and dad do?
They were pharmacists.
So they must have thought the idea of going into being an actress and stand-up comedian was a very sensible thing to do.
Oh, yeah, they were delighted with it, absolutely thrilled. Yeah, no, my dad used to pretend that I did something else because I would meet friends of theirs and they'd say, oh, how's the... I think he said I was a journalist, which I would say is less respectable, but I think he felt that that was at least something, rather than saying comedian, which, you know, yeah, I think he felt was a very flippant, by its very nature, a very flippant job. But yeah, used to tell people I did all kinds of things, I think. And my mum just sort of didn't mention it. I think my mum just hoped I was going to marry well.
And did you?
Well, no, but although she did love Justin, even though I think that she always wanted me to marry a plumber, because she said, well, people will always want plumbing. And she's absolutely right.
She is right.
But then when she met Justin, she really liked him. And also, I think because he was so tall, I think that my mum and dad really appreciated that, because we're a family of tiny, tiny people.
I thought, finally, some good DNA.
Yeah. Well, someone who could just change a light bulb, even more than the future breeding stock. It was more just on a practical here and now level.
Well, actually, in a way, you say you are fulfilling her wishes, because you are finally burying her.
Well, that's it. Yeah. That's it, absolutely. Along with a load of other random stuff.
And so what would be the other things that would go in there with it?
I suppose I should put my dad's ashes in as well. I'll bring those off my sister.
That's okay as one thing, I think. Your mum and dad's ashes. Mm. Keep them together.
So maybe we should go for something a bit more lighthearted next. Mm. I suppose I have so much memorabilia and things that I have collected along the way. I'm going to say collected rather than stolen, but a lot of the time I do mean stolen. In fact, you know what? One of my absolute favourite things is my, I've got a clipboard, which I stole when I worked at Granada Television in the 1990s. And it's an object of great beauty, and I love it to bits because it's got on the front of it the old Granada TV logo, which is like a G with a big pointy arrow. And it says, Granada, we make television worth watching. And I remember having that clipboard on the set of Stars in Their Eyes, the live final, and Richard and Judy. And so it came with me to a lot of important things early in my life. So I think maybe I might put that in there. And also it's a lovely reminder of the golden age of television.
Yeah. What did you do at Granada?
So I was a researcher, what we call a researcher. So I started off as a runner where you make the tea for various things. You've Been Framed was made there. So it was the 1990s. The entertainment department of Granada TV was quite well respected at the time and made all these big shiny floor shows, things like Stars in Their Eyes and all the Shane Ritchie game shows, which were tremendous fun to work on. And so I used to do every kind of thing from getting contestants. So I used to have to phone around and find people to come on the shows. And then I used to do the, you know, those awful interviews that the host has to do at the beginning where they say, so Michelle, you're from Horwich and I believe you've got a funny story about the time you once met Bobby Davro. And then Michelle goes, yes, I met Bobby Davro. And
she's the only one who's got a funny story about meeting Bobby Davro.
Even Bobby Davro hasn't got a funny story about meeting Bobby Davro. No. I love Bobby Davro, but yeah. That was fun. And then I used to do audience management quite a lot as well. So just wrangling people in and out of the studio. I remember one time we were doing, I think it was one of the Shane Ritchie shows, and everyone was ready to go and the show was just about to start to be recorded. And the director came over the talk back in studio and just said to the floor manager, look, could we move the audience around, because I'd put like a big coach party in just behind where Shane Ritchie was doing his thing, but they were all quite elderly and infirm and quite a lot of them were just eating their sandwiches and fiddling with their hearing aids. And the director said, this doesn't look great, could we move some of the younger people from up the back? So we ended up, and it was one of the most, it sort of, I think it really stopped me wanting to work in television, because we had to get all these old people out and walk them upstairs. And many of them, this was sort of a great effort. And then we sort of moved the younger people down. And it was like ageism absolutely physically represented.
And so obvious as well.
So obvious and so awful. And I mean, in a way, it was my fault, because if I had thought about it, then I would have known this was going to happen. But I was young and naive and didn't realise how much television is about artifice and shiny, beautiful people having fun. And but I think it was a very early indication that I wasn't suited to the world of television, because I didn't like all that kind of thing. You know, I didn't like all the glitz and the glamour. I was much more, that's why I like radio and podcasting, because I'm much more interested in voices and words and the spoken word rather than images. I'm just not a very visual person, Mike, as you'll know if you can see anything in my house.
I know the old Granada building very well. I did know it very well. I spent a lot of time there. It was a fantastic place, wasn't it?
Oh, amazing.
Those corridors where all the studios off to the side and Coronation Street out the back.
I know, the real original Coronation, well, not the original, but the real Coronation Street. And then while I was there, they constructed Granada Studio Tours, which was like a theme park. So you could go into, they built another replica Coronation Street, and then there were rides. And it was so weird, because you'd be working in the offices and there were roller coasters going past. And people, one day they got stuck. Some people got stuck on the roller coaster just outside our window. And we're sitting there trying to type up scripts and things. And there's all these people hanging upside down, looking slightly distressed. but it was an amazing time. It was just properly exciting, making, you know, stuff that the whole nation was watching. Because back then, because there was less choice, you know, you did feel like, well, something like Stars in Their Eyes was a massive event and everyone was talking about it, and the live final was really, everyone took it incredibly seriously in a way that made me, as someone who's naturally not very good at taking things seriously, kind of slightly lose my head. And yeah, I just get, you know, people like, right, Gary Barlow is walking. It wasn't Gary Barlow. It was it was some bloke. It was a tyre fitter from Wigan. But it was, it was really exciting times. And there was also a real, because I was young and there were a lot of other young sort of graduate trainees and things. So it did feel like being at university or something, when we were all just kind of hanging out. We used to go drinking a lot. And
did you go drinking in the old school?
The old school, run by Angie, yep. The most glamorous, wonderful woman who ran the old school with a rod of iron. So if you got too drunk, it didn't matter who you were, whether you were Mike Baldwin or just a lowly researcher, then you were out on your ear. And although Mike Baldwin just used to be in there all the time playing on the fruit machines, I remember that was... I remember Donal McIntyre. You know Donal McIntyre, the undercover journalist? I remember once we were in there and we were chatting away to Donal McIntyre and having a lovely time. And then we said, oh, you know, what are you doing anyway at the moment, Donal? He said, oh, well, I've just finished a series about nightclubs in Nottingham. But it's all been a bit difficult because I've really upset some of the nightclub owners. And so basically there's a bounty on my head and, you know, any time someone could come and kill me. And we all just slowly edged away. Like, lovely to see you, Donna. We'll see you soon, mate. Good luck with that.
Who was in charge up there? Was it David Liddermond?
Yeah. Up in the penthouse suite. So yeah, there was a penthouse suite at the top, which you very rarely, as a lowly researcher, you'd very rarely get to see it. But every now and then they would have, if there was someone particularly famous or notorious, actually. So we had O.J. Simpson on Tonight with Richard and Judy when he'd just been acquitted of murdering his wife.
Wow.
And Neil Diamond was on the same programme, and Neil Diamond didn't want to be in the same room as O.J. Simpson. So there was all this hoo-ha about how to move everyone into studio without them running into each other. So one of them ended up, I think actually O.J. got the penthouse, which seems wrong.
Yeah.
But I think Neil Diamond was busy, you know, sound checking and stuff. So yeah, you occasionally got to go up to the dizzying heights, which was still kind of quite 1970s-ish. It was still, because I suppose, I mean, the heyday of Granada must have been, you know, the 70s and 80s, really. I think it was slightly on the wane even when I was there, and then it eventually just became sort of subsumed into ITV, didn't it?
Yeah.
But it felt like, yeah, slightly faded glamour, but really quite nicely a little bit seedy.
Anyway, that clipboard.
What stories that clipboard could tell.
I know.
It came to Vegas with me. We did. I worked on the Mrs. Merton show, and we went to Las Vegas, which was a fairly traumatic experience in lots of ways, but amazing, you know, for a young, I was like 23 or so, and to go and work in Vegas for about a month was extraordinary. And we had, who did we have on it? We had Tammy Wynette and Patrick Duffy, who was Bobby in Dallas, who is one of the nicest men I have ever met in my life. We had massive technical difficulties. I mean, the recording just went on for hours and hours. And Patrick Duffy was such a trooper, and he got up and chatted to all the audience, because obviously we'd brought over, there used to be an audience of senior citizens from Manchester, and they'd all been flown over for the show, which was great fun, but very hard to organise and manage. And Patrick Duffy just got up and chatted to all of them and was just an absolute dream. I can't remember who else we had, but yeah, it was quite extraordinary. Oh, Tony Curtis.
Ah, now I've met Tony Curtis, and he is an extraordinary man, isn't he?
Mm.
He came to my son's school. My son went to a school for school refusers.
Oh, yeah.
Children who dropped out of school. And it was funded, amazingly, by Mohammed Al-Fayed.
Gosh.
I know. The things you never know about people.
Isn't this extraordinary? Well, I'm now going to look up Mohammed Al-Fayed's life story now.
When somebody's sort of vilified all the time, these things never come out. But he paid an enormous amount of money to fund this school, to help these kids. And he was very brilliant. He would turn up every now and again in the Harrods helicopter with somebody famous. And he'd take them in the helicopter and fly them to Sevenoaks. And he did it one day when we were there, and out got Mohammed Al-Fayed, and then out got Tony Curtis. And Tony Curtis then gathered all the kids in the assembly hall and said, told them how he'd had a terrible time at school and had been bullied, and that's why he learned to box. And he was a good boxer when he was young, but to protect himself. But he remembers it as very lonely and horrible. But, you know, that if you, you know, hang on in there, You know, you can do all sorts of things.
Oh.
And it was a wonderful thing to do.
God, lovely. Isn't that amazing?
Isn't it just? I know. Yeah, and so I've always had a real soft spot for him. I so wanted to jump up and shout, I'm Spartacus.
But then you would have, no one else would have got the reference. And
they
you
wouldn't have known what I was joking. I'd look like an idiot, as I often do. Oh, Lucy, lovely. Okay, well, let's put your clipboard from Granada Television into the time capsule. It's gone in there with your mum and dad. I don't know what good that's going
to
be.
They'll have a clipboard to get their schedule sorted for busy afterlife activities. I'm sure that'll be fun.
Yeah, they can write a list of things we must get Lucy to do. Brilliant. Okay, see what you come up with next. Okay, we're going to take a short break here to listen to some ads. Or possibly some silence. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back. Okay, let's find out what the third thing is that Lucy would like to put into her time capsule.
Well, because the difficulty is, obviously, it's things that are precious to you and that you want to preserve for all time, right? Mm. But I would say I was tempted to put in my cats, but that seems a little bit cruel, doesn't it? I love cats.
I think it's possible as a concept.
The only cats I've had are both still alive because I never had pets as a child. And my mum and dad really didn't approve of pets as a concept. They thought it was disgusting to have animals living in your house. But Justin persuaded me that we should get cats. And I was like, no, I want a dog, definitely want a dog. But we couldn't really have a dog because, you know, obviously we're away a lot. Mm. I mean, we have two children. We're not that worried about. We're like, that's fine. They'll cope for themselves. But you know, dogs really need love and care and and attention. So, so we ended up getting cats as a compromise measure. The compromise basically being all on my side because I didn't want to get them at all. But I absolutely love them. And I'm completely... The idea of having pets to me now, I totally get it in a way that I never did. I love my cats so much that I was doing an interview with a journalist who was looking through my social media. And she said, oh, Lucy, I've noticed in your Twitter feed and stuff, you've got loads of pictures of your cats and hardly any of your children. Is that because you're trying to protect your children's privacy? And I went, oh, yeah, that's why it is. Of course it wasn't. It's just because I constantly take pictures of the cats. I'm obsessed with them. And, yeah, and it's just taught me so much. I think it's been an amazing lesson for me because I am someone who is quite careless and chaotic, and I think having the cats and then the children has sort of given me a sense of responsibility and focus. And you know, I came very late to feeling any kind of sense of groundedness or rootedness, and I've always been someone who's lived in a million different rented places, and I just never had any interest in sort of accumulating expensive things. I've always got loads of rubbish and tat. But yeah, I think like now I definitely feel a little bit more grounded and sort of grown up and responsible. And I think that is down to having cats, really.
So you got the cats before you had the children?
Sort of concurrently with. We decided to just go for the whole thing. just get everything done at once. Let's just ruin it, you know, ruin the house in so many ways.
Have you got a boy and a girl?
Of both, yeah. So we've got a boy cat called Midnight and a girl cat called Daisy and a boy child called John and a girl child called Emily. So it works very well.
You don't get confused?
All the time. I mean, I basically often don't know. Well, I am now doing the thing that my dad used to do of scrolling through the names of every single person in the household. And I could never understand how that happens to you, but it absolutely does, where I call everyone the other members of the household's name before I get to the right one.
Yeah. See, I'm worried about the idea that you think that by putting them in the time capsule, they're going to be taken away from you. This is a concept. I think this is a magical thing, this time capsule. You can put their essence in there, as it were, and they will be there for when you need them.
Yeah, well, in a more sort of, in a cats as a general, or pets as a general concept, I suppose. Mm. So that if ever I open the time capsule, there will be a pet there for me.
Right.
Yes, I think mainly, I think I spent my early life being incredibly selfish and incredibly inward focused. And I suppose one of the nicer things that comes with age and family and all that stuff is that you are forced to be more outward looking. And I just think I wasn't that nice when I was younger, or I just wasn't that compassionate or empathetic, or there's lots of things that I think I've had to learn. And for me, and I don't think you have to have pets or you have to have children or you have to, you know, live with other people. People come to it in different ways. But for me, I think definitely I might have stayed being a bit of a self-centered person and much less happy for it, I think, if I hadn't kind of encountered these other beings along the way. And I mean, I resisted getting married till the bitter end, as did Justin. So we were both quite, you know, ripe in years when we got married. And yes, I always
your show was about the fact that you weren't going to get married. I remember that
show.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, I was dead set against it. And I still am, really. I mean, the concept of marriage, I think, is incredibly flawed. And you do so. I mean, as a comedian as well, it's much easier to be funny by being negative about marriage and commitment because, you know, there's no one wants to hear about a happy marriage. And so, in a way, getting married has extended my comedic output in that I can, you know, I've got so much more to bitch about now. Whereas I think, you know, I'd moaned about being single, but I never really meant it. Whereas I moan about being married and I really, it's coming from a very deep, passionate, truthful place within me. But I wouldn't swap it for the world. And I think that's how, you know, a lot of people feel, I think, is that it's, being single is a lot more free and uncomplicated, obviously, but being married has its pleasures, complicated and difficult as they are. So yeah, I think maybe what I'm putting in the time capsule is empathy, compassion.
Yeah, I think you're being slightly unfair on yourself because I think that it's a general experience that young people are self-centric, as it were. You see the world as revolving around you. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do and what you're hoping to do. And then as time goes on, I think it's perfectly natural to realise that actually you're rather irrelevant.
Yes. Yeah, I think it just took me a bit longer than most people to realise. But yeah, I think you're right. It's not, yeah, it's, but and it should be that way. And I would never encourage young people not to follow their dreams and all of that stuff.
No, absolutely.
But yeah, and you shouldn't equally give up on thinking about yourself as an older person. But yeah, there is a sort of nicer balance. Also physically, I just think letting yourself go is the nicest thing in the world. I just feel so sorry for young people because everyone can examine themselves in such minute detail on Instagram and everyone's looking at pictures of themselves all the time. I just think it must be horrific because it's bad enough when we just had, you know, very blurry photos from crazy nights out in the 90s, you know, you'd still be quite self-critical. But, oh my goodness, now when it's all in high definition, I can't watch. I did a TV show that was in HD And I was just happened to be around at a friend's house, and our telly is old and lovely, and everything looks like a beautiful 1950s musical, gorgeous. And my friend had a really high def telly, and I came on it, and I honestly was nearly sick in my mouth. I couldn't. I just couldn't watch. I was, and it was, I couldn't watch anything of the content of the program because I was just so busy looking at my awful face. But generally, you know, poor eyesight and a lack of, you know, a sort of a diminishing interest in my own appearance have made life a lot easier. And I just think it's very difficult as well in showbiz. I feel really sorry for younger people, younger women in particular, I suppose, but even the boys now, I think, are just so scrutinised and criticised, and you're constantly being judged. And actually, it's now extending to everyone, not just people in showbiz. It's everyone is sort of rating each other and evaluating each other all the time. And although, and I say all of this, and then I know loads of really lovely young people who aren't like that at all and who have learned empathy and calm and kindness a lot earlier than I did. So good luck to them.
Yeah, I think that's always the case. I think there will always be people who just go with the flow, as it were, but other people who just say, no, I'm not interested in that. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, those people are generally the happier people, I think.
They really are, yeah. I had a friend who I used to think was mad because she always just believed she was in the right constantly. And she, you know, always just thought she looked fantastic and every decision she ever made was right, and she could never understand why other people were so unreasonable. And I used to think she was an absolute nightmare, which she kind of was as a younger person, but basically what she was a middle-aged man in the body of a 20-something woman, because now that is exactly what my husband, and to a lesser extent, I am like, basically. Basically, look at a middle-aged man and take all the sort of positive attributes of sort of being quite self-confident and not suffering fools gladly or whatever, because I suffered a lot of fools in my time.
All right, so you're seeing that as a positive.
Yeah. I think you need a bit of everything, don't you, really?
Yeah.
A bit of balance in your personality.
Well, I'm going to put your cats in and assure you that they're perfectly safe and you'll still have them here. But I'm also going to put the concept of empathy and having an outward-looking nature and that sort of thing is very nice. I'm glad we put that in there, because actually so far we put a clipboard in with your mum and dad. And then pets. And they were dead against pets.
No, poor mum and dad. Look at that.
I know.
Well, I tell you what I would put in with my mum and dad is Dave Allen, because he is my absolute favourite comedian of all time. He's also dead, so I don't feel guilty like I do about the cats. And he would absolutely have my mum and dad in stitches, because I mean, we used to watch Dave Allen all the time. He was, even though he was quite irreligious and my dad was very devout, somehow they still absolutely loved him. And I think he's absolute genius. And if I could ever be a millionth as funny as Dave Allen, I would be very happy indeed. I just think every gesture, every word, so beautifully timed and paced and measured, and subject matter, you know, universal yet slightly cheeky. And he was very edgy in his day, but still quite mainstream. So I just think, yeah, he's a genius. So if he could go in just for my mum and dad's sake,
yeah,
and maybe we could keep the cats out but put empathy in, because they've taught me empathy. Can we go with that?
We can. We keep the cats out and you keep them at home. That's it. And we'll put Dave Allen in there. Yeah. Did you ever meet Dave Allen?
No, I did not. Did you?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, he came, and I think this is an example of maybe why he was such a great comic, is because when I was very young and I was performing at the comic strip, doing sort of stand-up, but not very good stand-up, not like your standard of stand-up, he came to see the shows quite often and would sit in the audience and watch all these supposedly unfunny young comedians. And he would then buy people drinks in the bar afterwards, and he was a real fan of it. And I think for somebody who is so mainstream to be looking for something new, I think that's a sign of somebody who, although they've had great success, they've got the nous to realise that times change.
Well, and I think that's most comics. I mean, even the really successful ones that I know, you love it as an art form and you do want to see what's happening from a purely, you know, as a fan kind of thing. Because I think, I mean, we've just discovered today that the Edinburgh Festival 2020 is no longer going ahead, which to me is a massive shame, because it's one of the only places now that I really get to see a lot of other comedy. So yeah, for me, that's real shame, not so much because I was doing a show, but more for seeing other people. Because I think you have to, as a creative person, you have to keep watching and absorbing what other people are doing, because it does refresh what you do. Even though you need to keep your own unique vision and style and all of that, you can't be blowing around like a reed in the wind, but you can, yeah, definitely absorb the zeitgeist, can't you?
Yeah, the fun of performing, I think, is that actually you are challenged to do things that you've never done before, in a way that you've never done them before. I loved it when my favourite Dave Allen sketch, it was him dressed as Sir Francis Drake standing on the poop deck, and somebody shouts out, "Captain, duck!" And he says, "Drake, you fool." And a cannonball hits him in the head.
I love a bit of slapstick as well.
Nothing wrong with that. So we've only got one thing left, Lucy, and it's something that you'd like to get rid of. This is often a quandary for people, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, I am, yeah, because I do sort of generally tend to try and be quite positive and upbeat. But having said that, probably the unhappiest part of my childhood all related to PE and the teachers of PE. So maybe, I'll tell you what I'm going to get rid of, is picking teams.
Were you one of the people who got picked towards the end?
Oh, I mean, it was really humiliating. And I remember once we were doing some kind of gymnastics thing where everyone had to pick partners. And the teacher did the classic thing where it was like, okay, so the most sporty people, she got them out first, and then they got to pick. And then, you know, the middling ones, and then they got to pick. And then the people who were absolute no-hopers, and she got them out to pick. And I was thinking, hang on a minute, I'm still here. And she got down to the last two of us, which was me and a girl who just had an operation on her leg. And we were just, there was no question of us picking or any, you know, we were just left together, and she left us in no doubt that we were the weakest of the weak. And in fact, I remember my school report from that particular PE teacher, which said, "Lucy is lazy, disinterested, and content to do only the minimum." And I remember being very upset by that, but also, and this is what a snob I was, thinking, I think she means uninterested, not disinterested. So I was, you know, clearly my attention and my skills were focused elsewhere rather than PE. But I think, yeah, cruel PE teachers, because I know so many people who've been scarred by a particularly, there was a mindset that seemed to be PE is a punishment, and it's about weeding out the people who think they're better than everyone else because they're clever, or the, you know, the people who are just weak. And it was, yeah, really, that's touched a very visceral part of, you know, that's touched me, the idea of PE. But then I don't know, but you see, because actually all my kids' PE teachers are really nice, and things have moved on, and people moan about, oh, they don't do competitive sports like they used to, but they still do, but they just don't make it quite so gladiatorial. So are aware that labelling children as either thick or weak, or, you know, anything that you are going to take with you for life. Because I think I have, for life, I've always said I'm terrible at sports. I've got no coordination. I'm really lazy. And, you know, again, as you get older, you realise, oh, no, hang on, I'm not really lazy. I just didn't like standing in a really cold hockey field and, you know, not being allowed to play. So me and Julia with the broken leg, we had to go and, you know, just hit balls at each other and thwack each other around the legs.
And why would you have fun in those circumstances? Yeah. That's the point. When you look at that situation, it's such an obvious thing to make the picker the person you think is probably least capable. You say, right, Lucy and broken leg, out you come. Now you pick your teams.
Huddle up here, loves.
And things become slightly friendlier and nicer.
No, it was a very, a dog-eat-dog world, because I think there was so much incentive to do well, and, you know, it was... But then, actually, you know, it probably made me the woman I am today, because that early sense of failure and disappointment is absolutely necessary for a comedian. I mean, you know, someone who has just achieved their entire lives is very unlikely to become a stand-up, I would say. There has to be some fairly fundamental flaw or sense of lack or loss that drives you into it. So maybe she did me a favour.
Well, maybe that's what they were aiming to do. Maybe they thought that this is what this does, is it toughens people up.
Well, you can build character in good and bad ways, can't you?
I mean, you can. I think you can encourage good character in people by being nice to them.
Yes.
And encouraging them rather than saying, well, you're really, really useless. Now go on, go and make something of yourself.
Well, this is why I get very tearful when we go to my kids' school things, because everyone is so nice. And I just find myself weeping buckets, because they do these assemblies and it's all about kindness and community. And I mean, when the schools had to close down, the teachers were so amazing. And the headmaster has been doing assemblies via video conferencing. And we all sat down to watch the assembly and I was blubbering because I was so moved. And my daughter's like, will you get out of the way? You're crying in front of all my school friends. But I found it really emotional because I say that would never have happened. Actually, I did have a really nice headmaster when I was at primary school as well. But particularly at primary school, I'd rather that they were taught the world is a nice, benign place. I think I'd rather educate the children for the world I wish existed. Mm. At least for a bit, and then let them find out the awful reality later, rather than, you know, educate them for the worst excesses of adult life.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with having dreams.
Idealism is no bad thing at all.
No, well, I'm going to put teaching PE at your school, actually, then. Just, I won't be cruel to all PE teachers, because I'm sure there were.
I'm sure there were lovely ones, yeah. Oh, yeah, Mr. Nevins. I should give a shout out to Mr. Nevins, who's my daughter's PE teacher, who's an absolute angel. He's lovely. So, yeah, it's all very different now.
Oh, Lucy, how lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time away from your children at this difficult time.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's... I'm not going to say a pleasure to be away from the children for half an hour, but we're certainly enjoying a lot of each other's company at the moment, so I'm sure both they and I will be... glad of a small break. Well, this is why God invented Minecraft.
You've been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my lovely guest, Lucy Porter. The programme was produced and edited by John Fenton-Stevens, and the music was by Pass the Peas Music. You can subscribe to this podcast on Acast or your own favourite podcast provider. And if you have the time, we'd really appreciate it if you could rate us and write a short review. Thank you. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook for all the latest about My Time Capsule at MyTCPod. Or you can follow me at Fenton Stevens if you like photos of grandchildren and cats. Thanks for listening. Especially if you made it all the way through to the last bit, the end. Congratulations. Although most sensible people would have stopped listening by now. I mean, I've not really got anything else to say. I'm just talking for the sake of it. I'm always tempted to just keep talking until the last person gives up. I mean, I don't really know what to talk about, but... nice weather we've been having recently, isn't it? Oh, My Time Capsule is a cast-off production. Thanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.